Welcome back to The Deep Dive, where we tear into complex ideas so you can walk away feeling thoroughly informed. Today, we are opening up a profoundly important and surprisingly relevant topic, Michel Foucault's The Birth of the Clinic, an archaeology of medical perception.
Yeah, this book is, well, it's foundational.
Yeah.
And it really forces us to rethink everything we sort of take for granted about modern medicine.
Mm.
We usually see medical history as this kind of continuous upward march,
yeah.
You know, scientific triumph after triumph.
Right, a smooth progression.
Exactly. But Foucault argues that the authority the modern doctor wields, that sheer objective certainty they seem to possess, it didn't just evolve gradually.
Okay.
He says it came from a sudden, really radical break,
mm.
a kind of conceptual revolution that happened right around 1800.
That's the hook, isn't it? This wasn't just about finding better science. It was a fundamental shift in the actual rules of thinking about illness.
Absolutely.
So if we're looking at Foucault's goal here,
yeah.
What exactly is the central question he's trying to answer? What's he explaining the origin of?
He's asking, fundamentally, how did the medical gaze come into existence?
The medical gaze.
Yeah, that specific, analytical, penetrating way a doctor looks at a patient. It's ultimately objectifying, trained to see underlying pathology rather than just, you know, listening to a subjective complaint.
So before this, illness was seen differently.
Very differently. Before this shift, illness was largely conceptual. It was an abstract classification, almost separate from the body. Foucault wants to know what needed to change structurally in the way knowledge itself worked for a doctor to start looking into the body, not just listening to its story.
Okay, and to figure that out, Foucault doesn't just write a history of famous doctors or discoveries. He calls himself an archaeologist of knowledge. What does he mean by that? That sounds deep.
It is. It means he's not really interested in, say, celebrating the great men of medicine. He wants to dig underneath all that.
Right.
He wants to excavate the sort of invisible structures of thought, the epistemes, he calls them, that govern what even counts as knowledge in a particular era.
Epistemes.
Okay. Yeah. And an episteme isn't just someone's theory. It's the underlying framework, the unspoken assumptions that determines what seems rational, what feels factual, and even what questions you're capable of asking in the first place.
Got it. So let's apply that idea. Take us back to the 18th century, the world before the supposed rupture. What did medical practice actually look like under those older rules?
Well, Foucault calls this classificatory medicine, or nosology. The key thing is to imagine a doctor acting more like a botanist or maybe Linnaeus, classifying plants and animals.
Okay, so diseases were like fixed categories.
Exactly. Diseases were seen as fixed, abstract entities, almost like species, separate from the individual patient's body.
So like measles is a species, influenza is another species, and they exist conceptually whether or not someone actually has them at that moment.
Precisely. And the doctor's main job was to listen really carefully to the patient's symptoms, their narrative, their story, and then match that story to the correct category in these ordered pre-existing tables of diseases.
So the patient's story was the most important piece of data.
It was paramount. Because that narrative was basically the only way the doctor could figure out which abstract label, which disease species, fit the situation.
Hmm. Okay. But wait a second. If this system made sense on its own terms, and Foucault says it did, why call the change a rupture? Why not just gradual improvement? I mean, aren't people doing anatomy back then?
It's a really good question, and it's absolutely critical to Foucault's whole argument. Yes, anatomical knowledge did exist. People knew about organs.
Right.
But it was mainly used for things like surgery or dealing with trauma, obvious physical injuries. It wasn't the fundamental basis for diagnosing internal illness, the kind you couldn't necessarily see from the outside.
Oh, okay.
The rupture Foucault talks about wasn't primarily biological discovery. It was institutional and conceptual. The massive shift was that suddenly, anatomical location where in the body something was wrong, which organ was affected, became the primary truth of the disease.
Overriding the patient's own description of their symptoms.
Exactly. The physical location inside the body became more real than the patient's story about how they felt.
So if the change wasn't purely driven by new scientific facts bubbling up, where did this intellectual earthquake actually come from? What destabilized the old way of thinking?
It was deeply political. Foucault centers it on the massive upheaval of the French Revolution.
Okay.
Roughly that period from, say, 1780 to 1820.
Okay, the revolution. How did that impact medicine?
Well, the revolution basically tore down the old structures, the traditional medical guilds, the old charity-run hospitals. These were dismantled or fundamentally changed. It created a kind of power vacuum.
And what rushed in to fill that void?
The state itself. The new modernizing government had a completely new and vital interest, ensuring the health of the population, especially for things like, well, the army.
A healthy nation, a strong army, makes sense.
Right. And this led to a massive reorganization of hospitals. The hospital stopped being primarily a charitable place where the poor went for care and often, frankly, to die. And because it was actively transformed into a state-sponsored scientific laboratory. And, crucially, a center for medical education on a scale never seen before. The clinic was born.
Okay, that sounds like a big logistical change, moving patients around, new buildings. But Foucault says it had huge conceptual consequences.
Massive. Because by gathering large numbers of sick people, usually the poor, into these new teaching hospitals, the clinics, they inadvertently created what Foucault calls a living library of pathology.
A living library?
Yeah. Think about it. Suddenly, doctors and students had access to hundreds, thousands of bodies exhibiting all kinds of diseases side by side.
So the patient themselves kind of shifted role?
Structurally, yes.
Yeah.
They weren't just seen as a suffering individual needing care. They became a case, an example, something to be studied compared with other cases cataloged.
Data points, almost.
In a way, yes. This concentration of patients provided the sheer mass of empirical data that the new, more body-focused medical science needed to really take off. It set the stage perfectly for the arrival of the medical gaze.
Okay, let's define that properly. The medical gaze, le regard in French, it's not just ordinary looking, is it? How is it fundamentally different from how, say, an 18th century doctor might have observed a patient?
It's completely different. The gaze, for Foucault, is a structured, analytical way of perceiving. It's a way of seeing that is specifically trained to bypass the patient's subjective experience, their story.
The stuff the old doctors focused on.
Right. And instead, it prioritizes finding objective, ideally quantifiable, signs on or in the body. The goal is to make the patient's body transparent, like a surface revealing the underlying pathological truth.
It sounds like just a shift in focus, but you mentioned Foucault sees it as a profound linguistic and conceptual revolution. You highlighted how the doctor's first question fundamentally changed.
Yes, that's such a perfect illustration he uses. The 18th century doctor operating under that old system of nosology would typically ask something like, "What is the matter with you?" They're seeking the classification, the narrative. But the 19th century clinical doctor, guided by this new gaze, starts asking, "Where does it hurt?"
Location.
Exactly. The truth of the illness is no longer seen as an abstract concept. It becomes geographical. It's located in the specific tangible space of an organ or a tissue within the body.
And to really confirm this internal geography, the doctor needed the ultimate proof, which I guess leads us to the most, well, unsettling part of Foucault's analysis, the sovereignty of the corpse.
Yes, it's a grim paradox, isn't it? The idea that the definitive truth about life and illness could only really be established through death.
How did that work?
Foucault focuses on figures like Xavier Bichat, a key physician of the era. Bichat championed the systematic routine use of the autopsy. This was the final crucial step.
Connecting the dots.
Connecting the symptoms observed in the living patient with the actual physical damage, the lesions, found inside the body after death during dissection.
That must have been a shocking conceptual leap. Bichat was basically saying, look, we've been listening to patients, but the real knowledge, the undeniable truth, is what we find inside the body after it stops living.
Precisely. The source material Foucault analyzes captures this powerful new imperative. Bichat's message was essentially, open up a few corpses. You will dissipate at once. The darkness that observation alone could not dissipate.
Wow. So death becomes the ultimate teacher.
It became the ultimate verifiable source of truth about disease. And this established what we now call the anatomoclinical method. It's the scientific mapping of symptoms onto physical spatial damage within the body.
And that method is still fundamentally the bedrock of so much of medicine today, isn't it?
Absolutely.
But let's bring this forward. What's really fascinating, like you said at the start, is how this history still shapes our experiences now, how it defines the power structure in medicine, which takes us right into Foucault's famous idea of power knowledge.
Right. And this is where Foucault becomes incredibly relevant to our lives today. The doctor's trained ability to see the truth of the body, supposedly better than the patient themselves can feel or articulate it, this comes from training the gaze and ultimately from the knowledge derived from the corpse. And this ability grants enormous authority.
It's not just knowing more, it's a form of power.
Exactly. For Foucault, this specialized knowledge isn't separate from social power. They create each other. Medical knowledge becomes a form of social control and individual control, too.
And the patient within this framework almost becomes secondary to their own illness.
In a way, yes. They risk becoming depersonalized. If the real disease is understood as this objective thing located in the organs, then the individual person experiencing it can seem almost incidental.
Foucault has that stark quote about the patient becoming the accident of his disease, the transitory object that it has chosen to inhabit. What does that actually feel like for us as patients today?
Well, it's that feeling, I think many of us have had it, where you feel like you're not really being heard.
Mm-hmm.
You go in with a whole story, maybe 10 different subjective symptoms, and you sense the doctor is primarily waiting for that one piece of objective data, the X-ray image, the blood test result, the scan to confirm or deny what's going on. Your experience feels secondary to the test.
You feel reduced to just the temporary container for whatever the tests show. The objective data holds all the power, not your lived experience of your own body.
That's the legacy of the Gaz Foucault described.
And we see this guise constantly extending itself, becoming more powerful through technology, right? It didn't stop with just looking and touching.
Absolutely not. Think about René Laennec inventing the stethoscope shortly after this period.
Right.
Before the stethoscope, if a doctor wanted to listen to the chest, they had to put their ear directly against the patient's body. It was intimate, but also kind of limited and maybe awkward. The stethoscope inserts this technical intermediary. It allows the doctor to see internal sounds, amplify them, translate them into objective signs, all without the, you know, subjective clutter of direct touch or maybe even the patient's immediate narrative.
It extends the gaze inwards.
Precisely. And today, the direct descendants of the stethoscope are things like MRI machines, CT scans, genetic tests.
All promising total transparency.
Exactly. These are incredibly powerful tools designed to make the body completely or almost completely transparent to the doctor's gaze. And they often reinforce that idea that the image or the lab number is inherently more truthful, more real than what the patient is actually feeling or saying. The knowledge seems to reside outside the patient, in the institution, in the technology.
So that power imbalance we sometimes feel isn't necessarily because individual doctors are uncaring, but it's sort of baked into the system.
That's Foucault's point. It's the inherited structure, the historical DNA of how medical truth itself came to be established in the modern era. It started around 1800.
So wrapping this up, what does this all mean for us, for people navigating the medical world today? What's the big takeaway?
I think the biggest takeaway is that the way we understand health and illness, what we even consider a real symptom or a proven disease, it isn't just a natural fact that science uncovered. It's profoundly shaped by these specific historical events, by language, by institutional power dynamics.
It's constructed.
It's constructed. Foucault teaches us that knowledge isn't just passively found, lying around waiting to be discovered. It's actively produced within specific setups, specific institutions like that 19th century teaching clinic.
Yeah, the unique value of Foucault, I think, is how he makes the familiar seem strange again. Things we take completely for granted, like a doctor looking at an X-ray. He makes you question the very foundations of that authority, showing it has a history, a beginning.
He reveals that the dominant biomedical model, powerful as it is just one specific way of seeing the body. A very successful one, yes, but one that was constructed historically.
Right. So here's a final thought for you, our listeners, to mull over. Since Foucault showed us that the way we primarily understand illness today, the biomedical model emerged from this specific historical moment that privileges the objective sign, the view from the outside, and ultimately the corpse. What other perspectives on illness might we be structurally blinding ourselves to? What about, say, psychological dimensions, social factors, or those persistent lived experiences like chronic pain that often defy clear images or lab tests? Are we still marginalizing certain kinds of suffering because they don't fit neatly into that powerful but specific anatomoclinical mold established 2 centuries ago? Something to think about next time you find yourself navigating the world of health and medicine.